The FDNY on the back of your coat stands for so much more than just being an FDNY firefighter, because we are the tip of the spear, and there are many people that look to our organization and to us as individuals to really lead the way. Training and education, no matter what company you're in, is the heart and soul of your organization. This organization that is full of people who care, we can literally do anything. And if you have people that care and you surround yourself with those people, you can do anything. The one label that matters is you are an FDNY firefighter. And on game day, we must succeed as a team. When one of us succeeds, we all succeed.
Welcome to Respond Resilience, along with my co-host Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we're joined by FDNY Deputy Assistant Chief Frank Lieb. He's the author of the best-selling book, Cornerstones of Leadership, On and Off the Fireground. We'll be speaking about his book, as well as leadership and training. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Respond to Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll also be bringing you a new installment of Resilience Toolbox, where we'll be spotlighting Rebound by Restorier, the first ever FDA-registered and research-backed hearing health device engineered to minimize hearing damage after noise exposure. We'll be right back to speak with Chief Lieb after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB.
Today, we're very pleased to welcome back Chief Frank Lieb. He's the Deputy Assistant Chief in the Fire Department in New York, and during his more than 30-year career, he's held several senior staff positions, including Chief of the Fire Academy, Chief of Training, and Chief of Safety. He's also been a member of the East Farmingdale, Long Island Fire Department since 1983. Frank's career has been defined by his unwavering commitment to fostering growth through training and development, a central tenet of his leadership philosophy. He's lectured nationally and internationally on motivation, preparedness, leadership, strategy, and tactics. He's also the keynote speaker for Firehouse Expo in 2022, and is also the author of the best-selling book, Cornerstones of Leadership, On and Off the Fireground. Chief, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
All right. Thank you, David, and hello to you, and hello, Bonnie. It's great to see you both again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. We love our repeat guests.
Thank you for the invite back. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You know, I'd love to jump right back to the 80s and go back to your early volunteer days. Could you talk a little bit about some of the people that were leading back then and some of the lessons that you learned from them?
Sure. And well, let's go back even further than the 80s. Let's go back to the 70s when I was only 7 years old and my older brother joined the volunteer fire department when I was seven. And I couldn't wait to become a firefighter myself. And I would have to wait till I was 14 to do that. But I think about some of the people that were my very early mentors, obviously my parents and then my brother Bobby in the fire service. And when I was 14, I was able to join the junior fire department. And it was 1983. And then when I was 17, able to join the firefighters and really, cut my teeth and go to fires and really do some learning. But as I reflect back, I think about so many different people that have helped mold me. You know, all of your life experiences mold who you become, right? At all the twists and turns and the different intersections of life and the choices you make. All are part of you and where you are in the journey today. And I'm no different. And I think about some of those people, whether it's my brother, whether it's Mike Kilbridge, who was one of my early mentors in the fire department, who's now a senior firefighter. He's been around for a long time, former chief of the department. And then even some of the other leadership that may or may not know how much they influenced, especially my early days. And there's so many of them. Some of the firefighters, some of the former chiefs like Jim Napolitano and Kenny Nitley and Al Capone. And there's just so many of these people. And then as I move forward and I learn from some of the chiefs, particularly Charlie Crimi, Greg James, and Joe Riley, when they instituted early programs to make it where our training was up to par of where it should be. And even though they took a lot of abuse for that, they set the standard in that high bar of where my volunteer department still operates today. No one realizes, or a lot of the younger members, they don't know how much that was fought against at different times, right? And now it's just considered the norm that this is the standard that you have to meet. And, you know, I witnessed them doing that, and I was quiet. I was a young firefighter, but even though I was quiet, I was quietly learning and watching from everything that was going on around me.
And I think you touched on something that's critical, and that's, you know, when someone's a new firefighter just entering the fire service or the department, how vital that stage of their career is in terms of influence from mentors, from other people who are senior to them, who have lessons to teach them, and how we got to kind of really honor that opportunity to mold them like you said you were molded. And with that in mind, as a new firefighter at FDNY, like, what teachings did your mentors pass on to you about training and preparedness?
Yeah, so my early mentors in the FDNY were amazing. And I remember the first night I went to the firehouse, I get my assignment and I show up there and I meet Captain Gene McGowan. And he sits me down and he tells me, you should, throughout your career, learn something from everyone you meet. And he said, sometimes you're going to learn what not to do. And then the second piece of advice, he told me to read something fire-related every day. And that is something that I've really taken to heart and always have always done. And a recent book that I read by Corley Moore, The 9 L's, in that book, he talks about that regardless of your profession, that if you read something, if you're constantly reading and learning about your profession and you invest an hour a day into doing that, in 2 years, you'll be at the top of your profession, because most people don't put in that dedication to doing that. And, you know, you hear it all the time, leaders are readers, but it shouldn't only be leaders. It should be everybody, that whatever profession you're in, to make yourself better. And I think leadership and our ability to mentor and foster our next generation, regardless of the industry, starts with your newest employees. We should be teaching leadership skills to everybody. Now, that might look a little different when you're teaching the CEO, right? Because continuing education, or if you're teaching a lieutenant or a captain in the fire service, but that leadership always has to happen, because you hear, well, if we teach them, if we give them all this education, they're going to leave. Like, well, what if we don't and they stay? So again, it doesn't matter what agency or organization that you're in. We need to be fostering that and having this mentorship. It needs to be ingrained in your culture and your DNA.
Good points.
This episode is made possible by Rebound by Restore Ear, revolutionary cold therapy for hearing loss prevention. To learn more, visit restoreear.com. That's RESTOREAR.com.
Can we talk specifically about your book? What is the central message of the book, and why did you write it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll start with why I wrote it. I did the keynote for Firehouse Expo last year. Peter Matthews had asked me to do that. He's the editor-in-chief of Firehouse Magazine. And he said, I just want you to write something about training, teamwork, and mentorship. He says, the rest is up to you. And because he says that's a gap, right? We don't have enough people putting out that message and how important it is. And for me, like, my organization values that. It's the training is the... And education, no matter what company you're in, is the heart and soul of your organization. You can't do anything if your people don't know how to do it, right? A cashier has to know how to, bring up goods or your business is going to fail. So that is the heart of your organization. If you don't have training, you're going to be heartless and soulless. It's not going to pan out so well. So that was how I got to the keynote. The message of the book is really taking my 40 years combined, 40 in the volunteer service and 30 in the FDNY, and think about the leadership lessons and what I've learned and how I've put them into practice. But it's those time-tested leadership lessons, and it's not the hard skills. It's really, the book is really all about the soft skills, and that's what seems to get us into trouble the most, whether it's with litigation. I was recently talking with Kurt Verone, who's a well-known fire service lawyer, and he said 80% of the litigation in the fire service alone is related to some type of soft skills. Mm-hmm. And then I think about some of the people that I've been exposed to in my career, both in a career volunteer and even outside my agency when I go and speak elsewhere. And you think about someone, you say, wow, that person really, really knows what they're doing. But boy, they don't know how to talk to people. They have no bedside manners, right? So it's truly special. And you get people that will follow you anywhere and do anything for you when you have those soft skills, when you know how to communicate with people. And really, these are communication skills that you could use with your children, right? I mean, and how we adjust and adapt to different personalities. And that's really the meat and potatoes of the book. Is now it's told in fire service stories, because I have an awful lot of fire service stories, and I have a lot of awfully unique fire service stories because of just the variety of incidents that we respond to in the FDNY, whether it's I'm dressing up in a costume as one of our mascots, or I'm responding to a plane crash, or I'm responding to a hurricane down in New Orleans. There's just the depth of different experiences runs the full gamut. And to be able to tie each of them in and say, okay, well, here's an actionable lesson that you can take in a simply laid out fashion where you could remember it, because the stories, I think, are mostly memorable type stories. And that's kind of the key to the entire book.
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit, and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve, and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen the leader who's tactically proficient but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fire ground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fire ground.
Speaking of memorable stories, I was watching your 2022 Firehouse keynote, and you detailed about escalator emergencies and a rescue you actually performed. I was at LaGuardia Airport, where there's a lot of escalators. And so now I'm riding the escalator thinking, you know, I'm kind of looking back on your presentation and all the things that you were talking about in terms of getting a step for training and cutting the step, trying different tools, all these different techniques that you were able to bring back in an actual incident. So I just wanted to say that, you know, something like that has a profound impact, I think, on anybody that sees that keynote. And I highly recommend anybody watch that, because not only is it philosophy, but it's also, you know, you basically added some nice real world examples of how important training is and how it can impact success of the operation. So just wanted to highlight that and ask you about this. Can you talk a little bit about inclusive leadership? It's something that you you spend a chapter on in the book. And what does that mean?
Yeah. So getting back to the escalator real quick, right? So I had an escalator fire and then an escalator emergency with somebody trapped in a 12-day period. And so it's about being better and making yourself better every day, every tour. And that was just what we were doing. So the benefactor to that readiness was that lady who got caught in the escalator 12 days later. It's being better so that we can save more lives and save and prevent injuries. And regardless of whether it's the fire service or any other profession, that's what it's about, right? I just tell that story in an escalator story because within 12 days, it mattered. It really mattered. So I'm glad you bring up the inclusivity chapter because I think that's a very important chapter in the book. And I was working a day where all of my firefighters were Hispanic, and I love my firefighters, and they know that, and they love working with me. And I kept telling them, I said, when we are all working together, we need to have a day where you guys plan all the meals. So we started off with some nice Colombian coffee in the morning and just the entire meal. And just we need to make sure. So diversity and inclusion are two separate entities. They get lumped together for obvious reasons, right? Because they do work hand in hand. There is some synergy there. But the bottom line is, when it comes to other than recruitment, right? If I'm out and I'm talking positively about the FDNY, which I'm always doing, so I'm a walking recruitment tool for the job, no matter who I'm talking to. But ultimately, when it comes to hiring firefighters or bringing firefighters into my volunteer department, that decision that's already happening. Where I have a direct impact is on inclusivity, right? And embracing my firefighters or embracing the employees, because that's where the rubber hits the road, right? If they're not part of the team, that leads to failure, and that can lead to catastrophic failure. So that's where I think the employees of the organization, for me, the firefighters, fire officers, chiefs, that's our sweet spot for where we can truly make a difference and make sure that we have that everybody that's there is included, is a valuable part of the team, and is trained and held to the same exact standard that everybody else is. And when you do that, every single time in my career, I have had success. And I have seen success play out many times. And I'll use the rope rescue in Manhattan. So we had the rope rescue where we sent four people out on rope and we rescued two civilians. We didn't know who the civilians were. We didn't care who the civilians were. We had trapped civilians and we were going to rescue them. And then the firefighters that operated up there, they were diverse. They were diverse in many different ways. And the most important diversity that they had from my standpoint was that they were from different fire companies. They all worked, all four firefighters were assigned to different companies. But the interchangeability, they're all trained the same, whether they're white, black, female, male, it doesn't matter. Right. Everybody. It doesn't matter. You, the one label that matters is you are an FDNY firefighter. And on game day, we must succeed as a team. When one of us succeeds, we all succeed. And that's a message. That's one of the chapter takeaways in the book, because that's important, because that's what we control. I can control that you're trained properly and that we operate as a cohesive unit. And that day, they all walked up to the 21st floor. And as expected, they all operated as one unit and individually lowered somebody down. And we were able to save a total of three lives, two by putting them by them going on rope. And the third civilian from inside the fire department. That's what matters.
We'll come right back to our conversation with Chief Frank Lieb after this special edition of Resilience Toolbox.
On this segment of Resilience Toolbox, we're speaking with Sarood Rajguru, PhD, Chief Scientific Officer and co-founder of Restorier Devices and professor at the University of Miami. We're spotlighting Rebound by Restorier, the first ever FDA-registered and research-backed hearing health device engineered to minimize hearing damage after noise exposure. Sarood, welcome to Resilience Toolbox.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How did you get involved with first responders to begin with?
So the University of Miami has been working for a number of years through the Firefighter Cancer Initiative with fire services all across the state of Florida, but specifically the number of fire departments that we have in South Florida. And that was our connection to working with fire departments, fire service members, and thinking about how do we take the partnership and the relationship that the University of Miami has built with the fire services to address the challenge specifically with hearing loss and balance dysfunction that occurs in firefighters because of the noise exposure that they get from their environment and the duties that they perform.
Dr. Rajguru, why should first responders be concerned about hearing health?
That's a great question, David. All of us should be concerned about hearing health, primarily because hearing loss has been associated with also neurocognitive decline, Alzheimer's, dementia, and in first responders, especially given the nature of the service that they have, the exposures to loud noises in their environment from alarms, from engines, from the sirens or the water pumps, chainsaws, etc., is quite extreme, and that can create damage to the hearing organs in our inner ear very early on. Oftentimes, those damages go undiagnosed and undetected, and they can have long-term hearing consequences, long-term health consequences. And given the critical nature of the job that the firefighters and the first responders perform, it is important that we not only protect their hearing health early on, but also help them make sure that they have a healthy long-term outcomes.
Let's talk about Restore Ear. Can you tell us a little bit about it? What does it do and where does it come in terms of mitigation of hearing loss?
One of the challenges with hearing loss is we always talk about protection versus prevention. Of course, we know that wearing plugs in our ears when we are exposed to loud sounds, loud noises is important to reduce the damages. But because of the situational awareness and the needs of first responders, oftentimes that may not be feasible. And so at Restore Ear, we started thinking about prevention and how do we prevent acute damages that are occurring right now as we get exposed to our service. And how does that lead to prevention of long-term health consequences? So we actually built, based on decades of research and a very well-known therapy of mild therapeutic hypothermia or cooling to reduce the inflammation and the damages that are associated with loud noise exposures. And that's where Restore Ear comes in. Restore Ear has created devices working and thinking collaboratively about first responders, as well as the general community, to think about how can we use this therapy that we all know, whenever we have an injury, the first thing we do is apply ice to reduce inflammation and provide a little bit of cooling. And so how do we do that for our hearing? How do we provide that cooling for the hearing? And that's what Restore Ear has developed.
Dr. Rajguru, what should first responders who are concerned about their hearing do to protect themselves?
Thank you, David, for that question. The first responders, and of course, all of us, one of the first things we should do is protect. When available, there are hearing plugs or over-the-ear devices that we can wear to reduce and mitigate the loud noises from affecting our inner ears and causing that initial damage itself or the trauma. But we know that there are challenges with that, especially in the first responder and their services. Situational awareness is key. And so in that case, the moment after you have had noise exposure, Restore Ear Rebound is designed to deliver that mild hypothermia therapy or that cooling to reduce the inflammation and hence prevent acute damage, which then helps with long-term damage and long-term consequences as well.
Anyone who wants to find out more about Restore Ear, where can they get more information?
So they can definitely come to our website, restoreear.com, but any of them can reach out directly to me, whether through my University of Miami email address or from my Restore Ear email address. We also have very active social media on Instagram as well as on LinkedIn, and we invite you to follow us. We invite you to come and learn about the work that we're doing, working with the fire services in South Florida, and connect with us. We want to be the ones who help protect hearing and balance health of fire service members and the first responders. And we're here to help and learn from you and work with you.
Dr. Rajguru, thank you for being here with us today in Resilience Toolbox. We wish you continued success with all your work.
Thank you very much, David.
How can current leaders or future leaders show that they understand and value their people? What are some tangible ways you could think of that maybe you've used?
Talk to them, ask them about their families, understand them, understand what makes them tick. What's, you know, you soon learn that we all have way more in common mm-hmm. than we do than we do differences. And again, number one label is I'm a firefighter. I could go into a firehouse anywhere on the planet. It doesn't matter. Our countries could be fighting. It doesn't matter. When I walk into a firehouse and I say that I am a firefighter, I'm immediately included. It doesn't matter. And I have done that throughout the United States and in multiple countries around the world. That firefighter hospitality is just, and we need more of that, right? Wherever you, and no matter what you're doing, we need more of that. So that should naturally extend to my organizations back here when I'm at home.
Chief, you used the phrase game day, and you also speak about it in the keynote. Can you elaborate a little more about what does being ready on game day mean?
Yeah. So, sports analogy is an easy analogy because most people could kind of relate to that. But, football players prepare for the season. They prepare for the Super Bowl. Baseball players prepare for the baseball season. Mm-hmm. And then the ultimate test is how do they perform? Did somebody blow their assignment in the Super Bowl and that caused them to lose? And that game for sports, the game's a plan. For us, we don't know when the next game is going to be, when the next run, when the next long. And we have to make sure that we're prepared because the public expects that, rightfully so. They expect firefighters to show up, emergency responders to show up, that know what they're doing, that are competent in their skills. And you never want to be the firefighter that had an opportunity to save a life and you didn't because you weren't properly trained or prepared. And that comes in many different ways, training, making sure your equipment is checked and ready to go. There's so many different ways that making sure that you're getting enough sleep, right, as well. So there's so many different ways that's preparation. It's the equipment and also making sure that we're taking care of our most important resource, which is our people.
You mentioned Hurricane Katrina before, and I'm very curious about what the response from FDNY to Katrina was.
Yeah, so following September 11th, we realized that we needed to have an incident management team. We had the forest folks come in shortly after that, and they helped us manage it. We were very good at managing shorter duration incidents, but nothing that would last, months. And Hurricane Katrina was the first time that our incident management team would deploy. Now, prior to my deployment to New Orleans, I had never heard of an incident management team. I was a firefighter on September 11th, so the incident management team and what they were doing at a higher level really didn't concern me. I had my own concerns to take care of within my company. So I was chosen as one of the first 300 firefighters that the FDNY sent down. We would send three waves of 300 firefighters down to New Orleans for 2 weeks each. I saw the incident management team in operation, but I got to see how much talent really exists in the FDNY. So the incident commanders of the incident management team, they got us all together and, they said, all right, we need two people who know how to fix a roof. Two people raised their hand. We need a couple of people that know how to cook for 300 people. A couple of people raised their hand. We need someone else who knows how to hotwire a car. And they said, no questions asked, right? We're not going to judge you. No matter what they asked, we had at least two. I was saying, man, we're like Noah's Ark. We got two of everybody. And you realize that this organization that is full of people who care, we can literally do anything. And if you have people that care and you surround yourself with those people, you can do anything. I can do anything when I have the right people. And that is proven true in any capacity that I've worked in my entire career.
Come on. Check it.
When our nation and communities around the world experience catastrophes and chaos, turn to Edie Darling, Ambassador of Peace. exuding faith, providing hope, and sharing God's love through these challenging times. She brings healing solutions and meaningful dialogue. She heals communities by building a foundation of mutual respect and trust, working collaboratively at a round table of peace. Allow Edie Darlin, Ambassador of Peace, to guide the way.
Well, Chief, you alluded to kind of the difference between being on the line and going to a large incident and then being part of the team going to Katrina and implementing incident command. If you had a time machine, you could go back and give yourself some advice when you transition, say, from company officer to chief level officer. What advice would you give yourself?
Calm down. Enjoy the ride. It's a fun journey, but you gotta enjoy it and just recognize that, hey, it's going to be okay, right? Everything will be okay. And then just keep doing, you know, that the advice I got early on was absolutely incredible and spot on. And I get asked often, what advice do you have for a new firefighter? Well, it's simple. It's two things. Read something or listen to this podcast, right? Like podcasts like this and others. There's audio books and good books out there. And there's so much that if you want to be good at anything, it's so simple to do nowadays. It just requires a commitment to doing that. And the other is to learn something from everyone. And I'm always learning, right? I keep a beginner's mindset. And I'm willing to learn. I try not to have a closed mind, even if I think, you know, even if I think I'm maybe a little rigid in my opinion on something, I try and keep that beginner's mindset and be open, because that's how learning, you know, that's how learning occurs.
Thank you. You've been a really strong advocate for wellness and occupational safety. And we know that there are many lost due to cancer in the fire world. And I really wanted to ask you, how can we support, but how can we all collectively do a better job in the coming year of advocating, protecting our firefighters? What needs to happen there?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So the first time I was on your show, right, was with Danny Noonan.
This fire is getting worse. You may hear the sirens in the background as more equipment arrives to battle it. Battalion Chief Joseph Riley said that the smoke and the heat and the damage were beyond belief.
We want to take what we've learned and pass this on to our brothers and sisters so this will never, ever happen to them again. And through folks like Chief Lieb and others, yes, the message has got to be passed.
The amazing Danny Noonan and the advocacy that he has and still has for cancer in the fire service and even beyond that, right? So the wellness of the firefighter, and we're a microcosm of society, right? Whether it's mental health, I mean, all of that that's really come to the forefront, and we're seeing more of that in certainly being addressed in the fire service. And I think the biggest way to advocate for it for firefighters and first responders is make sure that we are be as aggressive as you are on the fire ground, be aggressive in cleaning up afterwards and just making sure that we are be respectful of your firefighting gear. We know that it has, forever chemicals in it. But that's just one small part of a very big puzzle. And we got to make sure that we're taking the whole approach of this and that we're making sure that we're not breathing in smoke on a fire ground when we don't have to, that we're using our SCBA through overhaul, that we're cleaning up as soon as possible after. And if we continue to do that, and of course, you know, some firefighters are still going to get cancer. So we have to make sure that we're advocating for early detection, because early detection extends lives. And we need to make sure that we're doing that. And the behavioral health, like I said, that's finally getting more mature for first responders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I compare and contrast two of the chapters in the book about and talk about mental health and how after I responded to the plane crash in the Rockaways, how we really just went back and dealt with it on our own. However you did that. And I compare that to other incidents where it was very different, where we were able to be there for our responders and make sure they take care of them. And, you know, and it matters. It hits home, right? I mean, I've been there holding my friend when he's taking his last breath because he's died of cancer. And I've had a very good friend, you know, commit suicide as well. And, you know, you just, when is enough enough? I'm tired of losing my friends. And there's just so much more that we can do and be better. And luckily, thankfully, we are doing so much better today than we were just a couple of years ago. And I'm thankful for that and for podcasts like this that are constantly advocating for responder resilience and health and safety. And that's why when you asked if I wanted to come on again, I was thrilled because your message is what we need.
Yeah, it's exciting times in some ways because of some of the new diagnostics out there, technologies. We're hearing about scans that are AI powered that can now scan all your organs and see things that you know, they couldn't really see before, and blood tests and a lot of good predictors that are becoming available to us. So that's, you know, those are more tools for the toolbox to help us protect ourselves.
And they'll only be available to us if we take advantage of them, right? Otherwise, they're useless to us if they sit in the toolbox and we never go for early detection. Whatever it is, a simple, you know, firefighters should go for skin exams every 6 months. Mm-hmm. And you talk to firefighters and they're like, you know, I've never gotten one, or it's been 5 years. And we just had a skin cancer screening at our fire academy. We had 181 people show up to do that. It was more than they had the capacity for, but we didn't turn anybody away. And we had 29 people that had something that would requires to be followed up with. And it may be nothing, right? Most of those are probably going to be nothing, but it requires to go and get it checked out. That way we medically know that you're okay. And you talk about, you know, cancers that are largely treatable. I mean, skin cancer is right up there at the top of mm-hmm. some of the most treatable cancers when it's detected early. Mm-hmm. And we're lucky, you know, we have some partners with the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, with Molly's mm-hmm. Fund, with Detect Together, with so many other great organizations that are doing terrific work to help us help ourselves.
What I would love to see is more agency or station-based mental health checkups and physical health. So whenever you can bring that cancer screening to the house and make a whole shift do it all at once, right? It's like the more we do all those kinds of things, the more we normalize it, the more it seems healthy. And then we're also not asking people to take time off on their day off to go and do these things. You know, if you're providing it where they naturally are spending so much time, that's what I would love to see in the future. More.
I 100% agree with you. And so our plan on that day was, if we didn't have enough people signed up, we were going to assign units to come to the fire academy.
Great.
But we never got to that point because so many people. Yeah. So that was we now know for sure that our people, which I knew this, right? Our people care about their health. And we're now going to do this again and again and make sure that our people that want to do this, that we are providing that for them. Because you're 100% right. We should be able to provide the resources to be able to do that in many times while they're on duty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it ties back to what we were talking about in terms of, you know, how leaders can influence firefighters at the beginning of their career and create that culture of, you know, of wellness and that they're being looked after, like that their welfare and their well-being is an important asset to the department and to the leader. And so I just love that story that you guys brought the, you know, the screening to the academy. It's just a great.
Yeah. Great. And years ago, when I came on the fire department, our unions play a huge part mm-hmm. in the success of everything we do, right? They are, they really are partners with us, both our UFA, our firefighters union, and our UFOA, our fire officers unions. Mm-hmm. But they used to have a mobile med mobile that would go to mm-hmm. firehouses and draw blood. But that was 100% funded by the unions. And so all of these different programs are steps in the right direction and making sure that we do that. You know, on a, from a mental health standpoint, we have peer counselors that we could deploy. The night of the Twin Parks fire, where there were 17 fatalities. You know, we had peer counselors on scene, and these are retired firefighters that are willing to give back. And if I'm working a citywide tour, or I hear of an incident, or someone else that's working the citywide tour, they hear of an incident, and it could be that they know that there was a child abuse and a child didn't make it, right? We'll send peer counselors, retired firefighters, directly to the firehouse and make sure that we're checking up on those firefighters. And that's something that was, you know, before September 11th. Yeah. I'm not really aware of that happening anywhere. But we now have a robust cadre of people that do that on a regular basis. And I'm proud of my organization for them to really expand and make sure that we're taking care of our firefighters. Because you could lose a firefighter and he lose him even though he's still alive. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we prevent that. But we also don't want these firefighters going home and thinking that the coping mechanism, you know, is drinking or drugs or taking it out on your family. Because then we wind up, you know, we're winding up with high divorce rates, or we wind up with suicide. And these are all preventable, especially if we have peer counselors that go out and also do more to preload before an incident, where firefighters are able to, and our, you know, EMTs and paramedics are able to have coping mechanisms beforehand. So that way, when after they see something they shouldn't have seen, they don't go home and just start drinking, and that's their way of handling it, that we've preloaded. The next thing you know, instead of drinking, they went for a walk, or they went for a jog, or they did something else to relieve the stress, you know, of the job. And it's not only the job, right? The stress is at home as well. So it's all of these different things, and I'm proud of my organization for the things that we do to help our firefighters and you know, EMTs and paramedics as well.
This episode is made possible by Rebound by Restore Ear, revolutionary cold therapy for hearing loss prevention. To learn more, visit RestoreEar.com. That's RestoreEar.com.
Well, we want to commend you and your organization because we know you're leaders in so many ways. And I think that you're a model a lot of people look up to and follow. And so it's wonderful to hear some of the deployments that you do, especially for the peer teams and mental health, because I know other departments are looking at that and saying, I want to do that. You know, especially around here where we are in Connecticut, the laws were just passed in the last couple of years for peer support to be mandated. And so you're definitely a model agency for everyone around here in the tri-state area. So keep going. You're doing great things.
Thank you, Fed. I certainly appreciate that. And I tell people that we have a lot of people that go out and they speak outside the organization. They speak at the different conferences and stuff. Mm-hmm. And even new firefighters, when they tell me that they want to start doing that, and I think it's great, right? Because we need more positive advocates and role models. And mm-hmm. I tell them just always keep in mind the FDNY on the back of your coat stands for so much more than just being an FDNY firefighter, because we are the tip of the spear. And there are many people that look to our organization and to us as individuals to really lead the way. And when we lead the way, everybody is able to come through that. When the big dog leads, you help everybody. So there's certainly many people in my organization understand that. And we make sure that we never take that responsibility lightly. So thank you for that. I appreciate that compliment.
Well, thank you, too.
Well, Chief, as we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to talk about as far as the book goes or any other messages you want to share?
Just think, stay learnable. Keep that open mindset. Make sure that you keep pushing forward. We're all in this together. And and if the book is available on Amazon, as you mentioned at the start of the program, it's a bestseller in several categories. I get asked a lot for people who want a signed copy of it. You could follow Cornerstones of Leadership on Amazon, on Facebook. And anytime I'm speaking somewhere, I put it up on there. But it's been a remarkable and humbling experience that, you know, the first wave of people who support a book like that, they have confidence in that it's going to be good. But they don't know, right? Maybe they've watched me on a podcast, or they've read an article that I've written. And that's been the support that I've gotten both inside and outside the fire service has been remarkable. unexpected, especially you support outside the fire service, where I know there's people that are sharing it. They're saying these lessons are transferable to anywhere. They just use a fire service story to use it as the delivery mechanism, the vehicle, if you will. And it's been it's been great. And again, I'm super appreciative to be on your to be a return guest on your program.
Yeah, as are we. You're always welcome here, Chief. And again, it's Cornerstones of Leadership on and off the fire ground. I think what you're saying about getting such great response right out of the gate speaks volumes, because that's the hardest part of launching a book, is kind of getting some, you know, testimonials and some buzz going on about the book, especially when it hasn't really been out there. And so you've obviously got that going on, and now it's taken off. And so we wish you continued success with everything, and especially that book.
Thanks so much. And thank you again for having me and for continuing your message every podcast. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I also want to congratulate you just on everything you've achieved, but everything that you're going to continue to achieve next. That's probably the most inspiring thing of all of it, is that you're not going to stop. And we know that. So Godspeed to you in your next journey.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'll never retire from the fire service and teaching. That's for sure. Yeah, that's for sure. I love it too much.
Remember to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and check out our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.